This episode of Social Flight Live is made possible by Avemco Insurance. Mention Social Flight for a 5% insurance discount at Avemco.com, subject to terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Social Flight Live podcast, an audio version of our live show, hosted every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern at SocialFlightLive.com. Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Social Flight Live. I'm Jeff Simon. We have a fascinating and important show for you this evening. Shane Woodson is here from UAvionics. We're going to talk about general aviation safety in a world where drones are getting more and more common, and where collision avoidance isn't just a convenience, it's a matter of survival for general aviation. Before we get started, just a few things. Social Flight is absolutely booming right now with events in general aviation going into the fall. We've got pumpkin drops, we've got Halloween events and haunted hangars, all sorts of cool things, things happening around Thanksgiving, and we're even starting to see the events go in for Meet Santa events and Toys for Tots events. It is all at Social Flight. So please go check out socialflight.com or the free Social Flight mobile apps for Apple and Android devices. There are tens of thousands of aviation events and destinations, cool places for you to fly this fall. Be sure to get out there and do that. And in addition to that, we have a whole section of FAA wings courses, as well as aviation maintenance technician courses. And if you are a mechanic with an inspection authorization, you can get your 8 hours of continuing education directly in Social Flight. And we have all those courses. We print legal certificates. It's all there. And then in addition, we have our Fly to Win Challenge. We just gave away a Lightspeed Delta Zulu headset. And now we're giving away another one that you could have for the holidays, December 1st. And all you need to do is get that Social Flight mobile app, check in. It's completely free. Just check in at your local airport, you're entered in to win. But if you check in at multiple airports, get more points, get on our leaderboard, you get extra entries into that drawing. So lots of cool things to do there. Tonight's program, as you can imagine, is brought to us by UAvionics. The AV30, the AV20, SkyBeacon, TailBeacon, TailBeacon X, SkySensor, all of these amazing products that add safety to general aviation are all available there. If you've watched our Mustang build videos, you can see that we've got those, both the AV20 and AV30, going in that Mustang that's being built over my shoulder behind me. Lots of cool things, you can check them out. But again, thanks so much for them to keep the lights on, help bring this program to you as well. And now to tonight's guest. Shane Woodson is Vice President of General Aviation Sales at UAvionics, where he helps bring some of the most innovative safety and avionics technology to pilots around the world. With more than 35 years in sales leadership and a lifetime passion for aviation, Shane has built his career around one mission: making flying safer and more enjoyable for everyone. As a private pilot with 35 years of experience and also an experienced drone operator himself, Shane knows firsthand what pilots need in the cockpit. And during his tenure at UAvionics, he's been instrumental in bringing products like the aforementioned SkyBeacon, TailBeacon X, AV20, and AV30 displays to market. Systems that are designed to boost pilot confidence, increase situational awareness, and align with the latest FAA safety standards. When he's not busy helping pilots take flight with the latest tech, you can find Shane exploring, whether he's in the air on a motorcycle or an RV or hiking somewhere off the beaten path. He is an adventurer at heart. I am absolutely thrilled to call him a close friend and very, very thrilled to have him with us here tonight on Social Flight Live. Please welcome to Social Flight Live, Shane Woodson. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good. Looks like we've got your camera adjusting to the light there. There we go.
Yeah, there you go.
I have to tell you, I was really excited when you and I started talking about you coming on the show to talk about safety and specifically having to do with drones, because I think it's very unique that you and the company UAvionics really has one foot in either market. So tell me first a little bit about your background, how you came there, and how you are both a drone and a GA pilot. And then we can talk about how the company does both.
Yeah, well, so it's kind of full circle for me, because when I started flying radio control airplanes with my dad when I was, only probably 10 years old or so. And shortly after, we grew out of the small, radio control airplanes, we went into large airplanes. And so we got a Cessna 150, started flying that, and I got my pilot's license at about 16 years old. So, that now everybody knows how old I am, since 35 years I've been flying, but
I wasn't going to do the math. I'm just saying.
Yeah. So, we started flying big planes, and that was, moved up to a Cessna 172. I've been flying that, owned that for, now going on 20 plus years. And that's where, probably all of my 2200, 2300 hours is in that Cessna 172. So lots of time in that, not going anywhere fast, but going there safe. So, I started working with UAvionics in 2017 and helped launch the general aviation division of it. And so, as everybody probably knows, that a little bit about our company is we started in 2015, 2016-ish, in that range, with the UAS product. Our company was looking at it from a standpoint of, listen, there's this ADS-B mandate coming out, and drones are coming. They're going to get larger and larger in everyday usage. You start thinking about Amazon Prime, package delivery, Walmart, things like that now. And, that was in the very infancy of it. That was far out into the future. We were kind of looking at it as, and so, as everybody in our company is part of a pilot, our pilots, we're looking at it from a standpoint of there's going to be millions of drones come into this industry and come into the airspace. And so how do you kind of craft that and set that stage so that you are one of the stakeholders to kind of help do it safely. And so everybody is integrated, flying together and so forth like that. And so, yeah, we are a company that, like you say, we've kind of got one foot over on the unmanned side. We've got one foot, over in the general aviation side. And then we also, we deal with airports and we're in the defense side. So UAvionics is a multifaceted company right now from where it originally started. And so, when I came on, I went back and got kind of recurrent and not really necessarily recurrent, but I went back and got refamiliarized with flying radio controls and remote and went and got my remote ID or I'm sorry, remote pilot license. And so, I carry both licenses with me now. So
that's so cool. I mean, one of the things that has always fascinated me about UAvionics is as a company that started on the unmanned, on the drone side of the business, and then expanded out, your products are so tiny and light. Yeah. It's amazing. So, I mean, what are the typical products that you've got that equip drones today?
So, we started with, there are some products that are just ADS-B out transmitters, and that's like the Ping 1090i, the Ping 2020i. Those are basically the 1090 version and the 978 UAT version that transmit only for a drone, and they're very small. They're not much larger than the size of your thumb. We also do a full 250 watt MODES transponder. The Ping 200 at the time when we first started, it was Ping 200S, and there's been a few iterations. Now we do our TSO version for these, as unmanned systems are getting much larger. Now we have the Ping 200XR. And so it is actually a 250 watt MODES transponder, 1090 ADS-B out. It's got its built-in integrated GPS receiver built into it. So you basically just give it power, ground, plug a GPS antenna into it, because you want remote, kind of a remote mount antenna to, so you can position that. some of the early ones actually had the GPS built onto it. And so, we typically find like the 2020i and the 1090i, they have the GPS antenna. It's integrated and it's all part of it. So literally you just give it power and ground and it's off to the races. You know, the 200XR GPS, you plug an antenna into it so you can have a little bit more adaptability of where you want that antenna to be. So
very cool.
And that's a full 250 watt transponder. And, you know, and then we also, because of the latest rule for, you know, drones, we also make what's called the remote ID, which is this little piece right here. And so basically this is, you know, if you think of it, transmits, it's Bluetooth. And so it basically tells, you know, people that there's a drone there. There's really no registration, if you will, that's there. It just sends out a kind of a unique ID with that transmitter. So you could have one remote ID, you know, ping RID and turn it on, fly with it, turn it off, go over and put it on a different drone, turn it on, go fly with it. So it's really just one unit per flight of drone. So you don't have to have, you know, multiple ones for every single drone that you fly.
Right. Let's set the stage a little bit for people to understand the basics of what we have kind of across the drone and the general aviation space. So help me understand. My understanding of how it works for the general aviation space is, of course, we have the ADS-B out mandate, meaning automatic dependent surveillance and broadcast, that many people, if you're flying in any controlled airspace at all, you know, you have to have ADS-B now after the 2020 mandate. Yes. ADS-B out can be using the 978 frequency, can be using the 1090. And then there's a slew of aircraft that don't operate in those conditions that are not required to have ADS-B, like agricultural operators, aircraft that don't have electrical systems, use classic Piper Cub, things like that. But they can't be in those other airspaces.
Yeah, hot air balloons. Think about hot air balloons and you know, powered parachutes. Like you said, the agricultural, spray crop dusters will just use a short term for it. But, you know, most of those don't come with transponders because they rarely ever fly in airspace that needs a transponder. And so I think the percentage is something like 70-75% or so of those ship out of the factory without transponders.
So I think in just even limited to the world of general aviation, GA planes versus GA planes in the sky.
Right.
There seems to almost be a misconception right now in a comfort zone that since so many people are equipped with ADS-B out, and since companies like UAVionics create products that we can have on our iPad and see and use ADS-B in, you sort of get this sense, false sense of security that you can see all the aircraft themselves, all of the general aviation aircraft that are out there. And that's not really the case, is it?
It's not, because that's kind of a misconception. Is it, a lot of people, and this goes back to the early days pre-mandate when we were in 2017 and 2018, and it was, hey, I've got an ADS-B receiver, and you know, for those that don't know, we manufacture the Sentry for ForeFlight, and that's a dual band ADS-B receiver, and yes, it's able to receive both the 978 frequency and the 1090 frequency. So if someone has ADS-B out, if you have a receiver, you'll see them. But if you have ADS-B receivers in your plane and you're not transmitting, what you don't typically see is the aircraft out there that are mode C, mode S transponders that don't have ADS-B, because their transponder is reaching ATC and getting fed back on what's called the ADS-R. It's the rebroadcast. And so in order for you to see those, you have to be an ADS-B client. So you basically send a signal to the FAA, to the tower, saying, hey, I'm out here at this lat long and I'm ADS-B out, so I'm compliant. Send me the traffic. And then they send you 15 miles around you, plus or minus 3,000 feet. And that's your service volume, if you will, your ADS-B service volume. And so there's this misconception of is, hey, if I just have an ADS-B receiver in my plane, I get to see everybody. And that's not the case. You're seeing only a piece of the puzzle. You're only seeing really the aircraft that are transmitting ADS-B out. So if you're in rural airspace, as we call it, mode C, if you're in a mode Seedvale, you're in, Charlie Delta, or, if you're in, Bravo, sorry, not Delta, but in Bravo airspace, if you're in those airspaces, chances are everybody's going to be transmitting on ADS-B. So yeah, you can see them. But once you get into, uncontrolled airspace, or you're in, Delta airspace, or you're in, uncontrolled period airspace, you're not seeing everybody. You're missing a pretty good piece of the puzzle.
And of course, we're going to get to the drone part, but within the general aviation part, I think there's multiple levels of that. I actually see this in our own social place bonanza, because we have active traffic in addition to ADS-B. So we actually have not just ADS-B in, but we have the ability of interrogating transponders. So we will see, and you see that it shows up differently. It shows up as a diamond instead of an ADS-B looking chevron. And I'll see those. It's not like they don't exist. They show up and I see aircraft, but that's like one level, right? You've got aircraft that aren't participating in the ADS-B system, don't have it equipped, not in range for ADS-R, whatever the reason is, but I'm interrogating a transponder. But that still doesn't include the vast numbers of, less expensive aircraft out there that are or crop dusters, as you mentioned, at low altitudes, or the Piper Cub, all these guys that simply don't have avionics.
Yeah, non-electric, exactly. Yeah, right. Yeah, and so
there's no matter what you do.
There's exactly. I mean, hot air balloons. You think about the Albuquerque balloon race. Balloon Fest. The FAA's been in a situation with that for a few years because ADS-B came out. It's in a rural airspace, and they had to issue a bunch of waivers because. What does a certified installation look like of an ADS-B transponder in a balloon?
I'm pretty sure it goes in the picnic crate that you bring on.
It just doesn't exist. And so, because aviation is so dynamic and how it changes and there's all these different facets of it. I mean, powered parachutes, ultralights, they don't have to have ADS-B. And so powered parachutes and so forth like that, what do you install? How do you install it on a fan or on a, on a trike and stuff like that? So there's a large majority of airplanes that are out there that, that don't have this type of ADS-B, and they're not getting the benefit of the safety because Jeff, as you've flown, once you fly with ADS-B out and you're receiving ADS-B in, there's nothing like it. I mean, seeing the full picture of traffic and having, weather and everybody being able to see you, there's just so much confidence and so much safety in that. And there's a large segment of the industry out there that pilots, they don't get that because they don't have a suitable piece of equipment to be able to, put in their airship or airplane.
Yeah,
I use that term loosely because,
very loosely. So, as we're piecing this together, and we're going to get to the real latest news and what's going on. But as we piece this together, let's talk about the drone side.
Sure.
Because for years, this was getting bigger and bigger, but was not commercial. And we've, people flying their drones where they could see it and sometimes where they couldn't, but where they're supposed to be able to see it. And supposedly at altitudes, below 500 feet, but
400 feet AGL.
So tell me first about what the current regulations are, because there are, right? I mean, I have a drone and license, and they came out with remote ID. And so what is it that you already have to have on drones?
Yeah. So, I mean, if, pretty much other than the extremely small, micro drones, they don't have to, you know, forget how many grams it is, but it's 50 or it's extremely small in the size. I'm blanking on the weight itself, but you know, they're the ones that you can like put in the palm of your hands, you know, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're considered,
which can still destroy a windshield. I just want to say,
yeah, I mean, there's some weight there. If you hit it at 100 mph, it's going to cause some, you know, it's going to cause a crack or some damage, but these are pretty small, and typically you're going to be hard pressed to see those to get to those altitudes. But you know, something like the Mavics, you know, the DJI Mavics, or you get into some of the Skydios that are a little bit larger in size and they weigh, you know, pound or a couple pounds. You know, now those, they can reach altitudes. And so, yeah, those have to have remote identification. Every drone in that size and up right now has to be manufactured with a remote ID built into it, or it has to be able to, you know, to put one of these, it's called a broadcast, you know, where you can actually attach it to it and fly with it. So all of those have to have remote ID on them. And that doesn't necessarily report back to the FAA. It's just a Bluetooth signal. It's a, you know, Bluetooth 5, it's a long range Bluetooth. It's good for, you know, depending upon which one, it's good for a good kilometer, 1.5 kilometers.
Who does that help? Is it just for detecting and enforcing where drones go?
It's really more detecting to make sure that if you're flying the drone, that, you know, police departments, you know, public service, they have an app and they can actually take and tell where that drone's flying, and they can see where the operator is or where it took off from. And then if it's in an area that is closed, then they can go over and, you know, investigate and make sure that they're operating and they have what they need to be able to operate. They have to stay below 400 feet.
So it's basically like the license plate on the drone, right? We hope you are using it because that's the rule. And then we see you violating something and we know who you are and we can track you down. And if we catch a drone somewhere and doesn't have that, you know, quote license plate, then you're in even more trouble. Once we find you, you're in even more trouble. But that doesn't show up for general aviation aircraft, right?
It doesn't. Yeah, those remote identification doesn't show up on ADS-B. It is very different. It is really to make sure that, you know, you have good players that are flying drones and so forth like that. It's not given any kind of separation or anything like that. It's basically just to identify, you know, are you flying there, and are you safe to be flying there, and you know, is,
and who are you?
Basically, you know, because it doesn't really tell it, like I say, it just has a number on the drone, the ID. It's not necessarily telling you anything about the person. So, you know, it's not for commercial operations. It's not for, you know, it's not for package deliveries. Those actually have to have a different, you know, setup on them.
Right.
And you know, that's what we'll get into a little bit more is to these package deliveries, like, you know, Amazon Prime and Walmart and all these different companies and operators that are, DoorDash is now flying, you know, meals out on with drone delivery and stuff like that. And so they have, you know, they're going to have their own criteria that they have to have to operate, because they are, they're going to operate in that 400 feet and below altitude.
So let's talk about that, because that's what brings us to where we are now. And that's this expansion of commercial drone use beyond visual line of sight, BVLOS.
That's the key right there.
Tell me a little bit about what's happening in that space and then what's proposed, because that's where it starts getting really dangerous for general aviation aircraft, right?
Yeah, it can. Yeah, I mean, that's what the rule, the Part 108
rule
is.
Well, it can be if we can't see them, right? I mean, that's the concern.
Exactly. Yeah, and so there's a couple different aspects to that. So in the past, up until this point, They had to get waivers to be able to go fly in an area, you know, and so there wasn't a blanket, let's call it a blanket BVLOS or Beyond Line of Sight waiver. You had to do it for each operation, each flight. Some of them had, like, for instance, a specific area or like a test range or something that they would get kind of a window that they could have that for a period of time, but they timed out and they had to take and renew them. And so what this upcoming Part 108 rule is, what they're working on, and it's proposed, and so there's been a comment period all the way up until I believe yesterday it closed. And so is basically one of the key criteria of it for, you know, from a general aviation side of it, is that the drones or the UAS that are, this is a commercial beyond line of sight drone that's flying, and these are much larger. These are, 6, 8, 10 feet wingspans, and they're usually carrying something. And so these can obviously, inflict some damage and stuff like that. These devices will have to have, if this rule passes, they will have to have ADS-B receivers on all of them. So one of the key things there is they have to have a receiver. So if you're transmitting ADS-B or you're transmitting what's called an electronic conspicuity device, that drone can detect you digitally and avoid you, because many of them have more complex systems in them with autopilots. And so if you think about some of the pro user or the prosumer drones like the DJIs, they have collision avoidance. So they've got sensors on them. You can't run it into a wall climb up into a tree and things like that. It has all these sensors in there. Well, there's hundreds of thousands of them now that all have ADS-B receivers built into them. And what those, are designed to do is if it detects a target out there or detects another aircraft, it realizes it's there, it detects it, and then it avoids it. It can override, it can force land, depending upon the complexity and which one of it is. Some of them are manually, they have to avoid it. But some of them, the autopilot that's in it will take over and it will actually move out of the way and avoid that traffic. So it kind of gets out of the way of the general aviation aircraft. But the key there is it has to be transmitting some kind of a signal to be able to see it electronically.
Right. Yeah, because again, what we said earlier, you're talking about the ag planes, the small aircraft, the like you said, the powered parachutes and the balloons and all those other kinds of things that it won't see. Before we move on to that, do they have any form of ADS-B out? Can we see them?
So years ago, the FAA basically said, now certain ones at certain altitudes and larger can have ADS-B out, but most of your smaller ones, the FAA went down the route of basically saying they don't want them to have ADS-B out. And so ADS-B out wasn't part of the UAS program, for them. So part of it was, bandwidth, because you think about, there could be millions of additional aircraft out there. And so when you talk about millions of aircraft, and many of these are going to be smaller, lower altitudes, again, this, so
that's why
this,
they didn't want them, just as too many.
BV loss. Yeah. Cause it's, 400 feet, how far is it going to reach if it's flying around 400 feet all the time, so it's not really an ADS-B system to talk to their, to the ATC as much as it is just so other aircraft can see it. Yeah.
And then I can tell you that the big boys definitely have it, because the, it wasn't that long ago. I was actually taxiing at a mixed use airport that had military and civilian. And I was taxiing with a Predator. It was a drone waiting to take off. taxiing behind me. And I, yeah. and that was definitely on ADS-B, but it is strange turning around and seeing a really big unmanned aircraft taxiing around.
Yeah, these are large. I mean, large ones that are comparable in size to, you know, a small GA plane, or, you know, you think about some of the Sonics planes, they actually have some, you know, some unmanned versions of them. Those would have ADS-B out on them. But, you know, like I say, I could pull one out of a cabinet over here that's, you know, a little 3-pound, you know, DJI, it's not going to be transmitting ADS-B. Because if they put it on all of those, and you turned your traffic on your ADS-B receiver, you know what that would look like? I mean, it would just be a sea of blue, a little dot, you know.
That makes perfect sense, but it does mean that we're relying on the drones for collision avoidance. It does mean, I completely understand what you're saying. There's too many, and it would clutter the display, and we wouldn't be able to see things, and it would use up the bandwidth. And yet, that means it's really, really important that in addition to built-in collision avoidance, that they actually know where GA aircraft are in order to avoid them.
Yeah. And that's where part of this rule, if it's, again, beyond line of sight under 400 feet is where this rule is right now, because that's where, you know, they are all going to basically be operating. Now, again, the Predator, that, you know, and the MQ-9s and things like that, you know, the larger drones, those are military in many cases, and they apply a little bit different rules.
they don't want to be seen anyway.
Yeah, they don't want to be seen, and so they have transponders that we make on them, and they're actually Mode 5 IFF transponders, and they are basically friend or foe transponders, and so they're encrypted, and you know, you wouldn't see them, and they can tell if you're a friendly or a non-friendly. And so it's really interesting. But back to the other side of it is, you know, it makes the point extremely important for the drone operator to be able to have, you know, to have the equipment to be able to see other airplanes out there, not only just visually, but also to be supplemented with, to be able to see aircraft, you know, on ADS-B or, you know, electronically, because then that gives them that much more benefit and, or, you know, to be able to get out of the way and avoid that.
So that brings us to where we are today, where if we're relying on, and into the future, where if the drones themselves are responsible for collision avoidance in that case, and we have a limited fleet of GA aircraft that are transmitting or are visual, that now brings us to this word that I can never pronounce properly, no matter what, of electronic conspicuity. Is that right?
You nailed it.
Perfect. I hate that word. I don't know why I don't like saying that. All right. Tell me what this is and what this new technology or new, what will become a new rule of ability for us to have an outbound transmitter for everything that isn't ADS-B to help make this system work.
Okay. Yeah. So let me step back if I can on just something, just to kind of make sure we're clear on one thing, you know, for everybody watching is, you know, for, you know, electronic conspicuity, again, we're talking 400 feet and below. So as pilots, we know we have altitude restrictions that we have to stay above. And there are exemptions, for instance, like around an airport. If you're at an airport approach and departure, or, you know, approaching the runway and departing the runway, even in uncontrolled, those are exempted, and the drones can't be there. So there are exemptions in that, the pilot, the GA plane would always have what we call right of way. And so, what we're talking about, and I'll show you one right here, is this is the Sky Echo. This is a device that we ship thousands upon thousands of to international countries like Australia, the UK, Germany, And so this is, it is a portable. And if you notice, it looks very similar to Sentry. This is a dual band ADS-B receiver. This is a dual band ADS-B receiver, but it also transmits out. So this particular device transmits on 1090. It's low power, 1090 megahertz. So think of it as almost a portable low power ADS-B transmitter. It's approved and can be used internationally, but the 1090 low power is not FCC approved, so it cannot be used in the United States. So electronic conspicuity came about because it, for airplanes that couldn't have transponders or it didn't work, you know, they weren't conducive for transponders, or they didn't need the full power output for transponders, electronic conspicuity became a, you know, something that, like I say, internationally has been using for the better part of probably close to 10 years. And so it's very proven. It works extremely well. And the biggest thing with it is it's really electronic conspicuity's goal is to let you be seen by other pilots flying around you or other aircraft nearby. Think of ADS-B as kind of aircraft to aircraft and aircraft to the, you know, to ATC. Electronic conspicuity is really aircraft to aircraft, because we're talking a much lower transmit power. You know, it's 5 to 10 in a perfect world, probably 15 mile range. You're really not going to be reaching back to an ADS-B tower in most cases with that. So it's really just thinking of it as almost like a beacon saying, you know, I'm here, look out for me. So it gives a blip for everybody else that has an ADS-B receiver to see, and now you can be seen by all of those guys, you know. So ADS-B.
So it's not just for drones. It's the idea that we can equip all of these other unequipped aircraft with like a portable device that benefits everybody, not just drones.
That's correct. And that's the one, you know, we'll touch base a little bit more in just a second with the Part 108 rule. But, you know, there's this Part 108 rule talks about how a beyond line of sight operation is going to have to be conducted and what they have to have. And, you know, there are things like right away, like if they're flying, you know, I'll just briefly go across it if we can, is if you're flying below 400 feet and, you know, call it, you know, an area that is not exempted, the drone will have right away over a GA plane if it's not transmitting ADS-B out or electronic conspicuity. So, you know, this is not the rule yet. This is what has been proposed. And like I say, it closed as of yesterday. And there's lots of comments and feedback on it and stuff like that. And so, you know, it looks very likely that the FAA, they realize, you know, hey, there's a, we definitely want to make sure that we're listening to everybody. And there's, I've seen the comments, it's all over from hot air balloons to powered parachutes to, you know, ultralights to, you know, to obviously there's a large majority of drone operators that are also, you know, in there, because I mean, beyond line of sight, if you stepping back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, is, you know, Amazon package delivery, you know, the Walmart. I'm in a small town of about 40,000 people, maybe 40 miles outside of Dallas. And I can go out at any time, even I could go out right now and it's dark and I could go out and I could see drones flying at night making package deliveries. It's wild. I mean, I feel like I'm almost in the Jetsons.
I mean, in Boston yet.
It's weird. Yeah, it's there. And, you know, and so it becomes very important for those to be able to see, you know, everybody, and for us to see, the, you know, for us to have the ability to see them. And so, you know, where this Sky Echo 2, we've done a version for the FAA to be able to take and show the FAA in a 978 version that could be FCC approved. that, hey, here's a portable device that is extremely viable. It would be under $1,000. And in GA terms for us, like, that's a couple tanks of gas. I mean, $1,000, you know, $1,000 in GA is like, it pains me to say it because I'm part of it, but it's almost disposable, you know. But if you think about that's in the 700 to 800,
or GA, right? It's you're talking about, this could be anything. This could be the powered parachute, the balloon, the the little trike.
That's right.
It could even be the skydiver, right?
It could be a skydiver. It could be a hot air balloon. It could be the powered parachute, the ultralight. And so that's
scary. I've always thought about it. Gliders and skydivers, when you hear them announce, and you can't easily see them.
And that's right.
How wonderful would that be? In my area, I can tell you, certainly you try to stay away from skydiving, but you don't know where the gliders are going to go.
Right.
And that would be fantastic if I could see them.
My base airport is, they do a skydive operations, and so, yeah, they call it, but it's, as a pilot flying, it's pretty hard to pick them out until the chute opens up, you know? And so, you think about something like that portable, you know, something this size right here, it's battery powered, charge it up, you know, and in our tests that we did with the FAA, we shipped to them and they flew it. And essentially, even down in the bottom of the plane, think of it, worst case scenario, if you put it in the flight bag and you leave it in the flight bag and turn it on, it was still getting several miles of range, even down out of view and everything. And so, I mean, as a pilot, you're flying a Cessna 172, or in your case, you know, flying an experimental or so forth like that. I mean, you really can't see other planes that are much farther than 2.5-3 miles away. You know, 3 miles is, unless it's a 747 or something like that, you're not really picking up very many small aircraft over, you know, 3 to 5 yeah. miles out from it. And so, you know, to say you could even in worst case scenario get, you know, 2-3 miles range to see something, that's huge.
You know, that's life saving.
Yeah. And we've had several instances down in Houston and Texas where, you know, an ultralight or, you know, a powered parachute near missed or got collided with another aircraft. And it's just, you know, that's my big one for me is this, you know, I think the general idea that package delivery drones operating under 400 feet, most of us guys are flying above 400 feet. Let's just face it. You know, altitude is your friend when you're flying cross country, because if you lose an engine, you know, altitude's your friend and you've got more glide range. I know a lot of friends that fly low because they do, they do kind of chase through the mountains and different things like that. And so, you know, chances are you're not going to have a lot of drones flying through mountains in these areas. So major metropolitan areas are where you'll probably see a large majority of these. And let's face it, you probably don't want to be flying 400 feet above downtown. You know, it's not the best place to be.
That's not legal anyway. But
no,
think about it, what's considered an unpopulated or uncongested airspace, that allows you to get down to 500 feet AGL, right?
Correct.
And now you're talking about drones operating up to 400 feet. They're not going to want to operate very low, so they're going to be close to that. Now you're starting to get 100-foot separation. That doesn't sound that doesn't feel safe.
No, and that's
some
why
form of detection.
That's why they're really pushing for some form of, you know, some form of identification, some form of, you know, conspicuity to be able to be seen digitally, because these drones, most of them, I mean, it's not really conducive to taking strap huge, you know, call it mini radars and things like that on there, because you know, an optical in bad weather and fog and things like that, it's not going to work very well. And so ADS-B is, you know, the electronic conspicuity, it works on the ADS-B frequency. It would work on our 978 frequency here in the United States. And there's plenty of bandwidth on that. And so, you know, that's the big benefit of if this were to pass, you know, one, if you have ADS-B on your plane, you're already covered. They have to get out of your way. But for all those planes that are non-electric or that doesn't have some kind of means to have ADS-B out on, a portable device like this, you know, Sky Echo would then become something that would be very affordable. Very easy. There's no installation. It's voluntary. And that's the big thing I guess I should make sure that we hit on, that electronic conspicuity, if it does go through and it get approved, it's a voluntary. It's, you can turn it on and off as you wish. It's not like ADS-B where it's transmitting your position, it's transmitting your registration information and everything about you. It's a not portable electronic conspicuity. It's anonymous, it's voluntary, and there's no installation, and it's under $1,000. So, you know, it becomes a very, I guess, a low, it becomes a very low burden to be able to take and have this on there to make sure that you're one, they're getting out of your way and that you're able to be seen.
Why do you think as a regulation that this is something that hasn't existed until this rule? Why for general aviation in the 10-year history or in the 5-year history of mandate for ADS-B and the 10-year history of us all talking about it to death, why do you think there was no legal provision to allow for aircraft that did not have to have mandatory ADS-B where it told you who you were to have something portable? Why is that only coming out now as a rule?
You know, I think part of it is that they've identified or realized that it's going to have to, something's going to have to happen for the UAS side of it to, because beyond line of sight has been basically stalwarted for, you know, the better part of 10 years. And I mean, having something like electronic conspicuity out there that opens the door so that they can see us and you know, we can maintain right away and we can actually get the benefit. I mean, frankly, we can get the benefit of all the other aircraft out there. I'm more worried about, you know, because I can wake up in the morning and I can watch a guy flying around in a powered parachute in my backfield. I'm more worried about running into someone like that than I am a drone.
Me too. And like I said, gliders, because I half the time, yeah. You, no matter how hard you try, you can't see them and they don't show up. So
no, exactly.
If the ticket in is essentially the regulation is going to change to allow these portable devices because of the commercial interest of Amazon, Walmart, all these other guys flying below 400 where I'm not necessarily going to be. But the benefit of that rule is seeing all these other people from,
that's right,
skydivers to sailplanes to balloons to everything else. That seems like a huge benefit.
It is immensely huge. I agree. That's, again, I've been flying for 35 years, and Jeff, I can tell you on three fingers how many times I've actually seen a drone in the air. And one of them was one of them was probably, you know, 1,000 feet or more away from me, below me. And I mean, it wasn't a concern, but I mean, I have never seen one that close to me. I don't know how many I haven't seen, but you know, but at the end of the day, I would be more concerned, you know, seeing, you know, the, like I say, the glider, the powered parachute, the ultralight, the, you know, hot air balloons are pretty easy to pick out and see, but you know, I would like to be able to see those type of aircraft out there because they're flying around blind. And
why no mandate? Why, if you're going to come out with a device that's going to be less than $1,000, if it's going to protect lives by being able to see all of these things that are flying without, I mean, the idea was always money. So if the money obstacle, that was why everyone, AOPA and everyone else, was fighting ADS-B, or how do we do it, or how do we keep it, you know, what rules, who should have to have it and not. If that's come down dramatically, it makes me wonder why. I mean, imagine it came down to, you know, $100. Why wouldn't we say that if you're flying, you need to tell people, even if it's anonymous, you're there?
Yeah. Now, I know. I don't have an answer to that question, Jeff. I mean, I think it's. I mean, it's honestly interesting. It's. I tend to believe that. I think that the FAA knows where they're coming at from the 2020 mandate, and to put another mandate in on it with something like a portable like this, I think they'd get a huge pushback. And so,
it's too bad.
I mean, I get it. I've seen the benefit of it both ADS-B or, you know, with electronic conspicuate. It's awesome. I would never fly without ADS-B out or ADS-B in. And so, you know, I think by them making it anonymous, by them, you know, making the provision that it's voluntary, that they'll actually get more adoption of it and less pushback. And now, speaking of mandate, and I know, the Rotor Act is something that, you know, Ted Cruz in Texas has pushed for, you know, for another mandate, which is ADS-B in. And that kind of goes, you know, there's not a lot of information on it, but
That's a proposal, right? That came out after the Washington, D.C. Helicopter crash, right?
That's right. Yes. In their hearings, in the preliminary hearings and stuff in D.C., you know, the NTSB had basically said, hey, we've been pushing for an ADS-B, you know, mandate and ADS-B in for years. You know, I think it was something like 7 years or better. And we still don't have an ADS-B in mandate. And so, you know, I think that this, you know, Rotor Act, based on everything that's been happening recently, and especially with the DC midair, you know, it probably has a little bit of current events with it to drive towards an ADS-B in mandate. Now, again, it's very undefined right now, but it basically says, hey, if you have ADS-B out, if you're required to have ADS-B out on your plane, you will have to have ADS-B in. Which it does make for a provision for it to be portable. So it doesn't look like it would have to be an installed device, but a portable should be able to it. But again, it's still a little early to 100% say, yes, a portable would meet the ticket, but it sure looks like it right now. And all the conversations that we are kind of having with the industry also identify that, and kind of looks like, yes, a portable would do it. And I mean, again, ADS-B in, you know, if you have ADS-B out, have an ADS-B in, it just makes sense. I mean, like, wouldn't you want to see all the weather and traffic and all the additional information out there? And so I we'll see what's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but, you know, there could be a mandate for the Rotor Act and ADS-B in for, you know, next year. So, maybe we'll be back on to talk about that.
But absolutely.
But the whole thing is, you know, if this Part 108 rule goes through and has electronic conspicuity, it's going to allow for, one, the drones to be able to electronically see us flying GA aircraft and get out of our way. And then it's also, I think the bigger piece of it, frankly, and this may just be me, but it sounds like you're in agreement, but to me, there's a much bigger benefit of being able to see all of the other, I use the term non-cooperative because that's what the FAA does. If you don't have ADS-B out, it's considered non-cooperative. in the airspace. And so, and they, it's not that they're not cooperating. They just don't have the means to put any kind of ADS-B on it. You know,
right.
It doesn't exist, you know, because up to this point, the FAA has never really, they've always been pretty staunch against a portable ADS-B out device. But at a lower power that doesn't give you airspace access, because that's one piece that, you know, just to circle back, that the electronic conspicuity, it would, you know, it would allow you to be seen by the drones. It would allow you to be seen by everybody else. It's also ADS-B in, so it allows you to see everyone, but it doesn't give you, it's not a replacement for a full ADS-B transmitter. It's not going to give you access to Bravo, Charlie, or Echo airspace.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think it's a wonderful idea. Has lots of benefits, includes the anonymous side of it. Hopefully, you know, very reasonable dollar point as we all kind of poke you guys.
Avionics. Yeah. No, I think right now, I mean, sub $1,000 is definitely what we're looking at. I think in that probably $800 to $900 range, and, you know, give or take a little bit, is very doable.
So if I keep pushing you, you're going to get down to an actual number, and then am I going to be able to get a coupon and stuff like that out of you?
We'll have to talk, Jeff. You know, we do sponsor you, you know, so. Yeah.
I think it works.
I think it's a good thing for aviation, and, you know, frankly, I think it's good for safety, for all of us.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Shane, this is really, really helpful. I mean, I think it really spells out what the problem is, where we're going, and how there's this really interesting connection I find fascinating between the expansion of the commercial drone business for package delivery and other things that may really have a dramatic impact on general aviation safety that has nothing to do with drones, that has to do with above 500 feet. And that, man, I cannot tell you how much I would love to know where all those things are when I'm flying that are at altitude, that are in airspace I'm flying in.
I agree. And I'll leave you with this, if I can, is, you know, being a 35 year plus pilot in GA, we've seen the industry kind of, you know, it's been its heydays, and it's kind of been on its downtrend, and it's kind of stabilizing. And, you know, I hear from a lot of people that's like, hey, general aviation is kind of, you know, getting weaker. I really don't believe that. I really believe that the general aviation is really in kind of a state of transition. I think in five more years, maybe somewhere in that range, we're going to look at general aviation, and instead of just kind of thinking, you know, what we do, you know, in the past couple of years with single engine piston helicopters and what we kind of deal with day to day, it's going to include so much more. I mean, general aviation is probably going to end up including, for instance, it's going to end up including the drones, the AAMs, or the Uber taxis, if you call it, you know. And so there's so much more coming to general aviation, and at one of these days, it's going to all be part of our, call it, airspace bucket.
Yep. I totally agree. Well, Shane, thank you so, so much. This is really, really helpful. A great understanding of what's going on there. And thanks again to UAVNX for what you do with all your products. I mean, even aside from the work that you've done to make programs like this possible, make social flight possible, I'm just a huge, huge fan of those products. I mean, they are beautiful and eloquent. And I really mean that. I've really enjoyed flying behind the AV-30 and the AV-20 and the things that you can do to make inexpensive ADS-B installations happen and your portables. And so it just seems like if one company is going to make this electronic conspicuity happen, it seems like it would be UAVNX being the leader. So I appreciate you coming on to tell us more about that.
I appreciate it. I think I definitely know we're up to the task, and it's exciting times around here. So
excellent. Well, have a wonderful evening. I hope to see you again soon in person, my friend.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. Good night. And to all of you, thank you for everything that you do for general aviation and to support this wonderful passion that we all have. We will be back next Tuesday, actually, with our Cockpit to Cowl show, and we're going to be live from NBAA, the National Business Aviation Association's event out in Las Vegas. I'll be there in person with Brian Schiff. Go to cockpit, the number two in the word cowl, cockpit2cowl.com to register for that show. And we're going to be talking about something very, very cool. Our topic is going to be called Breaking the Rules for Safety. And that has to do with when you can actually go and, you know, when it really matters to think about protecting your life, to protecting safety. And when we bend the rules that we're all taught in order to make that happen, it's very important because we're going to talk about some accidents that have happened where people chose and were very, very concerned about breaking rules and put their own lives at risk. So again, cockpit2cowl.com. That is next Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific. And then back here on Social Flight Live, Tuesday, October 21st, with Heidi Porch. She has a story of survival where she ditched an aircraft in the Pacific while ferrying that airplane. And it is a harrowing tale, and there are some lessons in it for everyone. So I hope you join us there 2 weeks from tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time with Heidi Porch here on Social Flight Live. Until next time, thank you again for all of your time. Thank you for joining us, and I wish you all blue skies.